Hey everybody, welcome back to UFANcast on BlockU.com. It's been a while since we've chatted. We're back and football season is staring us down pretty heavily. We are just under 3 weeks away from the kickoff of college football season. The Utes take on Southern Utah at Rice-Eccles Stadium on September 1st. Fall camp is underway. It kicked off about a week ago. They're a week worth of practices in, so we got some position battle shaking out, some things kind of shaping up. Obviously, we had media day about 3 4 weeks ago, where Utah was picked third in the Pac-12 South, behind the California schools, but they did get some first place votes. And of course, this team is returning plenty of starters, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where the defensive line has been ranked by some as one of the best in the country. A lot of people put them right behind Alabama. And I believe I heard that ESPN put the secondary as the sixth best in the country. So the front four and really the back five, four or five, are holding it down. Of course, one of those position battles is at linebacker. But you know what? Everybody wants to talk about quarterback. That's where everybody looks. So, Alex, you've been to the last couple practices up at fall camp, and of course, if fans don't know, all the media has access to is the last 10 to 15 minutes of practice. So what media can see and report on is very, very limited, and of course, that's by design by Coach Whittingham. So, Alex, with what you've seen thus far, let's talk a little bit about the quarterbacks, Troy Williams, Tyler Huntley, and Brandon Cox. What have you seen from the quarterbacks? What's kind of your feeling, and what's Coach Witt said about the battle for the starting position?
So yeah, like you said, we don't get to see a ton, and there is limits about what we can report on. Unless Whittingham talks about it, we can't say who's with which team, general scheme, that kind of thing. But I do think that Troy Williams right now is the front runner. Whittingham said as much after the scrimmage. It was for the first few practices, everybody wanted to know who's leading the quarterback battle, who's leading the quarterback battle. And with how little we get to see, it really was a toss-up. The amount of plays that they ran when they were running with three quarterbacks all getting pretty equal reps, you maybe only saw each quarterback in for six, maybe eight plays at most, sometimes not even that many. And if they ran the ball, you couldn't judge anything there. But I've liked what I've seen from Troy Williams. At the scrimmage, they were doing a 2-minute drill. It was 4th and 18, and in the scenario, Utah was down by two, so they couldn't punt. There was like 40 seconds left. It was a 4th and 18, and Troy Williams delivered a perfect pass to Tyrone Smith that ended up being a 68-yard gain that set up what was the game-winning field goal by Andy Phillips. So in that situation, he did exactly what you'd want. It was a busted coverage. Tyrone Smith got behind the safety, but Williams, his pass was perfect. One thing that worried me about him in spring was that he was throwing the ball too hard. He had a little too much zip on his passes sometimes, and I think he's dialed in a bit more touch in fall camp. His movement in the pocket has been excellent. There's good old line play, but I mean, this defensive line, like you were saying, Shane, I think Phil Steele for ESPN had them ranked number two in the country, right behind Alabama. So I mean, there's a lot of talent there, and Troy Williams has shown great footwork, great movement in the pocket to step up to evade pressure, keeping his eyes downfield. Or taking off and running if nothing was available down the field. And so I think for those reasons, he is the leader. The battle for backup is heated. There are days when Brandon Cox looks better. There are days when Tyler Huntley looks better. One thing that Coach Whittingham said is that Tyler Huntley always tries to make a play. Sometimes there isn't a play there. Sometimes you have to just take a very short gain, or you just have to throw the ball away because there's just nothing there. And he's a true freshman, and he's still kind of in that high school mentality. I mean, if you've ever seen his highlight tape from high school or seen the stats he put up, I mean, he made plays pretty much all the time. And you can't necessarily always do that in college, and I think that's one thing that he's going to need to learn, because it does lead to some turnovers. And I think that was something that we saw with Travis Wilson when they started him a little too early, is he made some huge plays early on in his career, but he also had some pretty big mistakes, which he didn't see as much later into his career. So I think, you know, if I was doing the quarterback depth chart, I would go Troy Williams, Brandon Cox, and then Tyler Huntley, and I would do my darndest to redshirt him, give him a little time to bulk up, give him a year to learn where he doesn't have to play, and just kind of get him comfortable in the offense, get him familiar, and then a year or two down the line, I think he's going to be your starter, and I think he's going to be really, really good. But yeah, right now, Troy Williams is the leader for me, and I do think he's going to be your starter against Southern Utah.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think with some of the things that you alluded to, some of that sounds like it could just be comfort within the offensive system, you know, settling down, figuring things out, letting the game slow down a little bit, trusting his teammates. Speaking of Williams, of course, Coach Whittingham has come out, at least from what I've read, heard, and seen, that Troy Williams will be taking all first-team reps pretty much from this point on. So if that doesn't tell you who the starter is going to be, then I don't know what does. Of course, anything can happen between now and Southern Utah. But I think that's the ideal game for him to really get broken into the system, into the team, and really get comfortable. Now, of course, you alluded to Tyler Huntley. I think without a doubt, that kid's the future of the program. We talk about his just knack to make plays downfield, and his just looking back at spring ball, obviously he'd have freshman moments, but once kind of the lights came on in that spring game, obviously it's a spring game, it's a glorified scrimmage, but still, once those lights came on, the dude just made plays. He was very comfortable, you could tell. And it just seemed like to me that he's quite the gamer. Obviously, he was on TV. He was in front of, you know, 10, 15,000 people. And he just, you could see, kind of see the lights come on for him when the lights were on, in terms of the pressure and you know, everybody just watching him like that. So I agree with you, though. They ideally need to redshirt that kid. Just let him develop. Let him get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. And, of course, a year of just pure, basically, film work and fundamental work and stuff like that can go a long ways for a kid developing. But there's no doubt in my mind, when I've seen him, I get really, really excited to watch that kid. So, yeah, I would agree. Williams, Cox, and Huntley. But truly, Huntley, I probably would guess, might be really the number two in disguise, if that makes any sense, just because he's better than Cox, but due to the fact that they will probably want to redshirt him, he'll actually probably be the third string quarterback.
And Cox is very much more than serviceable backup. He has very nice touch on the ball. He's probably the fastest quarterback of the three. So I don't think you can go wrong with him at two, and I think you can feel comfortable with him as your backup quarterback, redshirting Huntley.
Yeah, I think the problem with Cox is he's just had a hard time staying injured, and that's had to have stunted a lot of his development and growth, just because whether it's been I believe he's had some hand injuries. I think he's probably had some ankle or knee injuries. I don't remember him, but I know that he hasn't been healthy very often, and that's really hampered him from being productive. And a lot of times, whenever you know you've watched him, when he's been, I guess, pseudo healthy, if that makes sense, he'll make a spectacular play, but followed up by just a boneheaded play right behind it. So I agree. Cox is probably serviceable. The question is, would he be kind of a long-term solution in terms of this season if he got injured? or if Williams got injured. I think that would be the ultimate question. But hopefully we don't have to go through that scenario again like we have over the last 7, 8 years. So moving on from quarterbacks, let's talk a little bit about the running back core. So obviously Joe Williams is back. He had a really nice conclusion to the season last year. He actually rushed for almost 500 yards, 400 of which really was in those last 3 games. He proved that he could be productive. A little bit of a fumbling problem, but as a lot of fans should probably remember, so did Devontae Booker. Yeah, that's actually what kept him off the field really the first 3 or 4 games of his career. So you got, according to Coach Whittingham, you got Williams one. Obviously, Troy McCormick is back. He's returning from that torn ACL, which he had going out of fall camp or spring ball a couple, about a, not this last one, but of course the previous one, making him miss all of last year. And we have a new face, one of the Hollandale three, making a strong push for some serious playing time with Zach Moss, which, again, another one of those players that I'm very excited to see. What are your thoughts on some of the running backs, Alex?
I think it's a really underrated group. Joe Williams is about 208, 210 pounds, something like that. I interviewed him after the scrimmage. He has absolutely gigantic arms, just big, strong-looking running back. He told me one of his personal goals, I mean, the number one thing is to help the team win, but he'd like to get 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns, which would be a pretty impressive season, considering the Utah single-season rushing record is John White has it, and I believe it's what, 15-19, something like that. And Booker went for like 15-12 in 2014. And so, you know, if he could go 1,500 yards, that would put him up there as one of the best seasons a Utah running back has ever had. Don't forget, he is the fastest returning player on the team. He had a 4.35 40 in spring ball. So imagine a roughly 210-pound running back running a 4.35, which is really fast. I mean, that's you know, Cailin Clay, you know, Reggie Dunn, that kind of speed practically. And he's 210 pounds. So I think people are sleeping on Joe Williams. I haven't, it's very limited time, but I haven't seen any fumbling issues from him. The coaches haven't alluded to any fumbling issues. So, I mean, they totally cleared that up with Booker. I think his pass blocking has improved from last year. Again, similar thing you saw with Booker. I mean, his position coach is Dennis Erickson. I mean, you know, you can't get much better than that. So, I think we could see a pretty big season from Joe Williams. He's more of a home run threat than Booker. Not quite as strong, but not many backs are. But he's plenty serviceable running between the tackles. He's shown off some nice strength this year, and he's got a lot more speed than Booker, so they don't necessarily have to just run the exact same type of running plays with him. They can do some other things to take advantage of his speed, and I think they will. But you know, I think he is a legit number one back in the Pac-12. One thing that both Dennis Erickson and Kyle Whittingham have alluded to in fall camp is that he's not going to get quite the carry load that Booker did. Erickson told me that they kind of beat Booker up a little bit too much last year and over his career. But I, you know, they kind of said Joe Williams will probably see 15 to 20-ish carries a game is kind of the plan. And then you've got Troy McCormick, like you alluded to, very shifty, very fast. He has about the same speed as Joe Williams, I would say, but he's a lot smaller, so he's a lot shorter, so he can kind of he's definitely more agile, more lateral quickness, lateral cut than Joe Williams. Joe Williams is more of a one cut and hit the hole and go kind of a back, where Troy McCormick is a bit more shifty in the open field, and he's a home run threat anytime he touches the ball. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them put Troy McCormick in the slot sometimes, just to try to get his athleticism on the field as much as they can. And the one thing that's impressed me with Troy McCormick is he's harder to bring down than you would expect for somebody with his size, because he has incredible balance when he's running. So it takes a bigger hit to bring him down. So he, even with his small as he is, he's able to run between the tackles and pick up tough yardage. You'll probably see, I think the coach has said, they'll probably try to get him 5 to 10 touches a game. I wouldn't be, I don't know, how much of that would be running versus catching passes, but I would guess you're going to try to see them get him the ball because he is a playmaker. And then the last one is Zach Moss. The kid, bottom line, does not look like a true freshman. He is big. He's physical. He's got good speed for his size. He's not as fast as Williams or McCormick, but he's got decent enough speed. But he's the best pass blocker of the three running backs, I think.
That's impressive for a freshman.
I know. There were several nice blocks he threw that allowed plays to happen in the scrimmage. So usually the main thing a running back needs to work on is pass blocking, and Zach Moss is there already. He's by far the most physical of the three running backs, a bit more like Booker in his running style versus somebody like Joe Williams, who, Joe Williams is a bit of a power back, but he's got a lot of speed. So Williams is kind of in between Booker and, say, McCormick, where Moss is very much like Booker. He is a power back. And I think you're going to see him get carries. I think his ability as a pass blocker is huge. I don't think I don't think you can keep somebody like that off the field. I mean, you could see him in third and long situations, so that they have an extra, blocker in there. And I think you could also see him in third and short, since he is the most powerful running back. He did have one fumble in the media session on, I want to say Monday, but Whittingham said they'd have to check the film, but it looked like it may have not been a clean exchange with the quarterback that may have contributed to that. But other than that, I haven't seen any fumbles from the running backs. But like I say, I've maybe seen, an hour of play time and maybe a little bit more. And it's a rotation. There's two other guys that are seeing some reps. Armon Shine, who was a late add to the recruiting class, and Whittingham has spoke positively about him. I don't know what his role is going to be. I think he has a redshirt year. I think he's actually a four to play three from JUCO, which is pretty much unheard of.
Yeah.
And then I think Bubba Poole was like that too. He actually got out of JUCO in Vegas in a year, and then redshirted with Utah for a year. I think he was a four to play three. Shine is a bigger back. Haven't seen a lot of him. He's not certainly as good as Booker, but he's certainly more of a Booker style back than Williams or McCormick. Bigger, more power back. I've probably seen 5 or 6 carries, maybe a few more than that from him. Running against that defensive line is just, it's running into a buzzsaw. So, none of the backs, the running backs had a good day on Saturday, but other than that, there haven't been a lot of long runs because there's just no holes in that defensive line. And the second team defensive line versus the second team offensive line is just as dominant. But And then the last back is Devontae Henry Cole, who's another Florida back. He comes out of the Fort Lauderdale High School, St. Thomas Aquinas, which is an absolute powerhouse. They've put more players, they have more players in the NFL right now than any other high school. Joey Bosa's from there. And there's a bunch of talent comes out of that high school. And Whittingham spoke highly of him. He's another big back. He's similar to Zach Moss again in running style. Big, but with decent enough speed. So they're very deep at running back. There's a variety of running backs, which I like to see. You know, in 2013, the running game wasn't quite as productive because they didn't have a workhorse back like a John White or a Devontae Booker, but you saw them use a variety of running backs depending on the situation with Bubba Poole, Kelvin York. Thank you, Kelvin York. You know, he was the bigger back. Then you had, you know, Bubba Poole, who was smaller and shiftier, and then they had Lucky Radley as well that year.
Right.
So, you know, so it's, I think you're going to see more akin to like 2013 with the running backs versus like the John White era or the Devontae Booker era, where one back just gets a ton of carries. And I don't think that's a bad thing because you're going to keep the backs fresh. And, you know, unfortunately for both John White and Devontae Booker, they missed games due to injury because they just had such a huge carry load.
Well, and they were such a focal point, too. I mean, those guys go down. Fortunately, last year when Book went down, Williams did a good job picking up that load. But the nice thing is, as you alluded to, they can probably lean on any one of these backs at any given time. It's frankly, and I'm not going to compare Utah's offense to Oregon's, but it's kind of how Oregon does things. They'll throw running back after running back after running back at you, and they just keep coming. So I think that's a good way to go. And of course, with this offensive line that Utah has, which arguably, obviously, time will tell, but it may be the most talented offensive line that Utah's ever had. Obviously, there's some good ones out there, and obviously, you know, when there's names like Jordan Gross and those guys, those are some great individual players, but as a unit, this one might be as good as it gets, and you combine that with these running backs. As we talked about the quarterback a little bit earlier, you don't have to worry much about the throwing game, as Coach Whittingham calls it, when you got such a really nice foundation of productive running backs, skilled running backs with, you know, kind of a snowplow type of offensive line. So, and that will transition us into the offensive line now. What are your thoughts on the big uglies up front? Obviously, they got Garrett Bowles, which was just a ginormous recruit, literally and figuratively. So what are your thoughts on the big guys?
I like the offensive line. So heading into camp, they had, you know, Sam Tevi at left tackle, where he started last year, Isaac Asiata at left guard. They had Lo Falemaka at center after the unfortunate injury to Hiva Latui. And then you had Felisi Uhatafe at right guard, and then J.J. Diemelman at right tackle, where he was a second-team All-Pac-12 performer at the position last year. And I like Diemelman as a tackle, but Diemelman is kind of the classic Utah tackle, where he plays tackle in college, and then they slide him inside in the pros. You know, you saw that with Zane Beatles. You saw that with Tony Bergstrom. Have there been any other ones that I'm missing? I'm trying to think. Because Gross was a tackle, both at Utah and the pros, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Patafi's another one.
Yeah, that's most of them, though. The notable ones.
Yeah, Patafi is the same way, where he was a tackle at Utah, and then they slid him to guard in the NFL. And so Diemelman, I think, Garrett Bowles, everything I've heard and seen, he's the real deal. You know, everything that made him one of, if not the top JUCO recruits, everything that, you know, led to people rank him that, it's coming to fruition. He is really good. He's big, he's long, he's athletic, great footwork. He's got, you know, the hip bend flexibility that you want from a tackle, great hands, doesn't let defenders get into his body. I mean, it's everything you want from a prototypical left tackle he's got. He, you know, he's looking like the real deal. And so I think the coaches were like, you know, you can't keep him off the field. So what they did is they want to get the best five guys, as Whittingham has said, the best five guys on the field. And so Dielman has slid into center, and they've moved Sam Tevi to right tackle, and Bowles is at left. And so there have been some errant snaps from J.J. Dielman. The practice on Tuesday, the first snap the media saw, he hiked it to the quarterback's feet, and then one or two snaps later, he hiked it over the quarterback's head. Now, had the quarterback been Travis Wilson, it probably wouldn't have been over his head, but most of these quarterbacks are all in the 6 foot to 6'2" range, not 6'7" like Travis. But you know, it's an adjustment for a quarterback player to snap the ball. But Whittingham said everything's coming along. It's just a matter of practice, and your starting offensive line will likely be Bowles, Asiata, Dielman, Uhatafe, and Tevi. And Jackson Barton will probably see time in the rotation. He looks good. He played last year. He rotated with Sam Tevi last year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him do the same thing this year. So, you know, the offensive line, there's a lot of talent there. And I think one of the best things they have going for them is they're facing the best defensive line they're probably going to see all season in practice every day.
Yeah, without a doubt, that defensive line's nasty. We'll get to that here in just a second. So, but the last offensive group to talk about is the wide receivers. Sounds like Guy Holliday is instilling a little bit of confidence in these guys. A lot of the names are kind of familiar for the most part, that, you know, a lot of fans will recognize in terms of hearing the names, but in terms of productivity, obviously probably not as much outside of like Tim Patrick. Raylon Singleton has gotten some run, but obviously a lot of unknowns with their wide receivers. Sounds like they're getting a little bit of swagger, and Coach Holliday, of course, BYU's wide receiver coach last year, is trying to build up the confidence of these wide receivers, which, you know, when you start breaking a new quarterback, you know, wide receivers kind of the other half of the equation. Can they get open? You know, can they make the catch? Can they, you know, run the right route, et cetera, et cetera? So it sounds like, you know, listening to a lot of reports, listening to some interviews, that there's some skill there. It sounds like there's plenty of speed, which is something that Utah hasn't necessarily had. But it sounds like, you know, we really won't know until the ammo goes live. Of course, the story with Corey Butler-Byrd being indefinitely suspended due to some criminal mischief, you know, just being a dumb kid. Sounds like he'll probably be back within pretty quick time in terms of just some Twitter reports that I've seen. So it looks like he'll have an opportunity to get back on the roster and possibly contribute. So the wide receiver core has had some quite a bit of negative press over the last couple of years, obviously a position coach being fired. What are you seeing from this group as we kind of get ready to really dive into more two-a-days and kind of the dog days of fall camp?
So the first thing that I want to say about the wide receivers is I absolutely love the size that they've got at the position. You look at across the board, you've got Tim Patrick, 6'5", Caleb Repp, 6'5", Raylon Singleton, 6'5", Tyrone Smith, 6'4". Raylon Singleton is absolutely gigantic. He looks like a tight end practically. I mean, he caught a pass a couple days ago, and it was like, I had to look it up, it was like, Oh, that's Singleton. I almost thought it was a tight end. He is big. And Raylon Singleton, he's had trouble staying healthy, has been his biggest problem. But when he plays, he's good. And if you remember back to him in high school, he had something like, I'm not totally, these aren't exactly right, but more or less 40 catches and 20 touchdowns as a senior. I mean, he was a touchdown machine in high school. And you know, if he stays healthy, he's going to be good. Tim Patrick is kind of the leader of the group. I interviewed Tim Patrick his first day at Utah practice back in fall camp 2014. And I interviewed him a couple days ago. And it's he just I've always really liked Tim Patrick, but he definitely seems like he's more mature. He's more of a leader now among the team. When he got here, he was just really kind of excited and just kind of in awe of everything, it almost seemed like. And so he's really kind of matured, and I think you're going to see him perform well this year. I think they had big plans for him last year. And couldn't utilize him obviously because he was injured. He appeared against Utah State a little bit, but just really couldn't go. And then was thankfully given medical hardship by the NCAA and given another year. But I think Tim Patrick's the leader of the group. Tyrone Smith has had a nice camp. He had the big catch in the scrimmage. He's got good speed for his size. Tim Patrick does too. Caleb Rep and Raylon Singleton are both just big. They are big physical wide receivers that are just going to go up and get the ball. When, you know, you throw a jump ball up to a 6'5" wide receiver who's over 200 pounds, like both Rep and Singleton, they're probably going to come down with a catch a lot. Caleb Rep reminds me of a little bit faster Kenneth Scott, maybe not quite as good a hands as Kay Scott had, but you know, just kind of a faster Kenneth Scott. This is a group, they have a lot to prove. There's no question about that. But I think there's potential there. Kyle Foulkes is another name to keep an eye on at slot. He was a track star in high school, 100 meters, and he's got absolutely blazing speed at the slot receiver position. And I really like Guy Holliday. I interviewed him in fall camp here, and he's I think building confidence in the receivers, which is a thing that I don't think Stubblefield did. I don't think he did a good job building up their confidence, but at the same time, Guy Holliday, he's building them up, but he's pushing them. You know, they're never, what they're doing is it's never quite good enough for him. You know, he always wants to see something even better from them. But at the same time, I think instilling confidence in them that they can be better. And so I think he's also really put a focus into catching the ball, not dropping it. It's both mental and physical. They're working on the jugs machine a lot, and it's just focus. And then you know, getting the physical down. Because, I mean, it's mental, too. And I think that was Drez's problem.
Oh,
the,
sure.
The physical, it was all mental with Drez. Drez had good hands. Drez was running before he caught the ball. That was his problem. And I think Guy
Even
Holliday.
The ball gets his body a lot, too, which is kind of hand in hand.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I think it was all mental because he always did great on the jugs machine. He did great in practice. I mean, he never dropped a pass in practice. But I don't really remember ever seeing him drop passes. And so I think really focusing on the mental side of things too, which Holliday definitely is doing, I think that's really going to pay dividends in decreasing the drops. I mean, there have been drops in practice. There's no doubt about that. But I'm cautiously optimistic about the wide receivers. I mean, they've got a lot to prove, but there's talent there. Another name to watch is Alec Dana. He's a JUCO player.
Another burner.
Got good size, good speed. He was recruited by Mike Leach at Wazoo, and I think that tells you what you need to know. That dude knows quarterbacks and wide receivers. I mean, that's basically all he uses on offense. So, and if he's good enough for Leach's Wazoo offense, he must be pretty good. He hasn't really, like, done anything to blow me away in fall camp, but I also don't remember any drops or anything. He runs pretty good routes. He's decently quick. I also think there's going to be more of an emphasis on the passing game this year, which I think will probably help the wide receivers as well. Like Tim Patrick said when I interviewed him, that the team's not going to move the ball if they don't move it. They have got to move the ball first and foremost. It's their job on offense. They need to be the ones that move the ball first and foremost. So I think they've got confidence. They know that they need to step up. And I think there's a chance that they will. I mean, the passing game has been so poor for so long that I'm not ready to say, oh, yeah, they're going to be great this year. But there's reason for hope that they can do better. There's reason for confidence.
So as we wrap up the offensive unit, you know, when you're replacing a quarterback, when you're replacing, you know, a stud at running back, you know, Kenneth Scott, you know, obviously his injury was a little bit derailed a little bit by injuries, but he was reliable. He's one of my all-time favorites, and I'll go to my grave saying that. Britton Covey, obviously he's on his mission now. So, you know, there's some attrition there, as you expect in college football. And as, you know, I've said multiple times, and I was actually just on a podcast with some of our USC counterparts over at Conquest Chronicles. You know, I've said this, like I just said, multiple times. Utah has a championship-level defense, and I'm not just talking conference championship now. I'm talking national championship-level defense. Special teams, similar category. Now, of course, we have to see what happens at punter, but I have reason to believe they'll probably at least be in decent shape there. So special teams, defense have always been so great. But if they can get average play at offense, then that takes this team to a whole nother stratosphere. We're talking, you know, what Stanford has been doing the last couple of years. That's not out of the realm of possibility for the Utes. And, you know, I'm excited to see what Troy Williams can do. I think he's got, just as you alluded to, you know, he throws the ball hard, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but he's got a strong arm. He's mobile. But he's also got a swagger about it. And I think that's something, maybe that's the key word to this offense, as we alluded to with the wide receivers, but probably with the unit as a whole. I'd say there's probably a little bit more swagger to him this year. You know, you got some new fresh blood in there. I think Guy Holliday's personality is, I'm not sure if he's as fiery as like a Morgan Scalley or a Sharif Shaw, but he's just as affable and just as likable.
He's more fiery, I would say. He certainly commands respect.
Yeah.
Without question. He demands respect. He demands, you know, perfection from his group. So he's not as vocal as Sharif Shaw, but nobody is. But he certainly has a lot more fire than, say, Taylor Stubblefield.
Yeah. So I would say there's a lot of – basically I'm saying I have pretty high hopes for the offense. I'm not saying they're going to go out and score 40 points a game. How optimistic are you about this offensive unit? Because I know I'm feeling – pretty good about it. Not obviously, I'm, like I said, not 40 points a game good, but I'm feeling like there could be progression.
I don't think they need to score 40 a game, right? I think middle of the pack is good enough. I mean, this defense is going to be nasty. I mean, the secondary is one of the better in the Pac-12. I think UCLA and UW are probably 1 and 2 in some order, and then Utah and USC are 3 and 4 in some order. And I think, you know, most teams in the country would probably kill to have Utah's secondary. It just so happens that the Pac-12 just has a ridiculous amount of talent in the back end this year. And so I think that Utah's secondary is to the top 10 to top 15 unit in country possibly. And so they're going to be able to cover. I think they're going to cover well enough that they can deliver coverage sacks, but I think they're not going to have to cover for a super long time because this defensive line is nasty. So if you've got that much talent on defense, the offense just needs to be decent. I mean, they won 10 games last year with the number 11 offense in the Pac-12. If they get up to the number 8 offense, the number 6 offense in the conference, I think that translates to they win the Pac-12 and are in the conversation potentially for the college football playoff. Now, I don't know if they could jump all the way up to number 6, but if they're 8, 9, something like that, there's a chance they could win the Pac-12 South. And I'm cautiously optimistic that they can do that. I'm not ready to say that the offense is going to be good or decent yet, just because the defense they go up against in practice is so good that it's hard to tell. But usually, I've covered, this is the third fall camp I've covered, and it's always the defense is ahead of the offense, but we expect that right now because that's just the nature of it at Utah, right? That's usually what you hear from the coaches. That's usually what you see. That's not as much the case this year. It's the coaches are they seem happier with what the offense is doing, and so I do think there's a chance this offense could be decent. Now they're not going to be Oregon. They're not going to be Arizona. They're not going to be Wazoo. But if, like you said, if they're Stanford, they could win the Pac-12. If they are decent, smash mouth team that, throws the ball when they need to throw it and can keep the defense honest with the passing game, they run the football and they play great defense. I mean, that's the age-old formula for winning football games. It works at the college level, it works in the NFL. And I think Utah has the team, especially with the talented offensive line, the promise at quarterback and wide receiver, and the depth and talent at running back. I think they have a chance to be decent on offense this year. I think that we still don't quite know because I mean it's just so hard to tell in fall camp. But I'm excited to see this team play. I really am.
So I don't think we need to talk about the defense that much, at least not right now. But the one position group I really do want to talk about is linebacker, because obviously replacing Johnny Paul and Jared Norris, those are huge holes. But Utah definitely went out and got some talent. So it sounds like there's some front runners already for those positions, and it sounds like we have some new names. So. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen at linebacker, Alex.
So Sunia Taltioli is the leader of the group right now. He's not the biggest guy. He's built a bit like Gianni Paul, and Gianni Paul proved that you don't have to have prototypical size to make a ridiculous amount of plays at the position. But he nearly had an interception in the scrimmage. He seems to be around the football a lot. I remember fans hadn't seen him play much because obviously Utah mainly runs two linebackers, and Gianni Paul and Jared Norris were both really good, and Jason Whittingham was darn good himself. And so you really didn't see Taulioli play much last year, but I got to see him in practice. The fall camp practices and the in-season practices when he would play with the twos last year. And I always came away impressed with the way he played. I always thought this guy has the potential to be pretty good. And so I think with like as we've talked, there's so much talent at D-line, there's so much talent at the secondary. The linebackers don't have to be the huge playmakers that Gianni Paul was, or the talent that Jared Norris was. They just need to not screw up. basically. Play a sound assignment football, fill in the gaps on running plays, you know, support in the passing game, cover the tight ends, that kind of thing. They need to just be solid and not make mistakes. And there's so much other talent on the defense that that's fine. And I think there's more than enough talent at linebacker to do that. And I do think that there's the potential that they could become a good linebacker unit. There's still Kavika Luafatasanga, who was Utah's big recruiting win, flipping him on signing day from Ole Miss, where he had been committed for almost a year. He got to Utah late, so he's not – his conditioning isn't quite where it needs to be. He's a little out of shape, and his knowledge of the playbook isn't quite where it needs to be. Whittingham has said he hit a bit of a wall in the scrimmage. He was thinking a little too much and not just playing. And so I think he's going to be good. I mean, I interviewed him. He has absolutely fantastic size for the position. He's long. He's athletic. He has the potential to be very good. I think he's just going to take a little bit of time to really get into the shape that he needs to be in to play in Utah's defense, play at this high altitude, and to just get kind of comfortable within the scheme. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Whittingham talk about this in signing day, using him a bit like Trevor Riley or Nate Orchard, where he could play linebacker, but they could also slide him down to the line some, and he's kind of a hybrid pass rusher. I could see him transitioning into that role. And I think he's a player who's going to get better and better as the season goes on. And you know, he's going to have three games against non-conference opponents to kind of get comfortable out there to learn the playbook. And he still has like three more weeks of fall camp. So he's one that he may not be performing quite as well as people thought right away, but he's one that I think he's, like I said, he's going to get better as the season goes on. And then the other name is Cody Barton, who he's played well. He's the number two linebacker right now. He's, you know, he's solid. He hasn't done anything really flashy that's really stood out to me, but at the same time, he hasn't made any glaring mistakes. You know, he's a good player. I think he's got good athleticism for the position. You know, I think he was a safety in high school. So, you know, but it's a bit like Brian Blecken, where he's kind of not quite fast enough to be a safety. And so I think linebacker, you know, they kind of bulked him up a bit. And I mean, his brother is an offensive tackle, Jackson Barton, who's like 6'7", 310 pounds. So there's good genes in that family. And they put some good weight on him. And so I think linebacker is a good spot for him. So, you know, really, the linebackers, Kaukele's made some nice plays, but in general, they haven't done a ton to really stand out, which I think is fine, because they haven't stood out good, but they haven't stood out bad. And with, like I said, with the talent they have on the defense, as long as the linebackers do what they need to do and just play assignment sound football without mistakes, that's all you need, at least at first. And then as they get more comfortable, I think you could see them turn into a good unit.
Yeah, I mean, this defensive unit, as we've alluded to, is going to be nasty. I don't think we need to dive too much really into the defensive line. We've kind of alluded to them as well as the secondary. A lot to be excited on the defensive side of the ball.
I will say with the defensive line, the future is really freaking bright.
Yeah.
They added Maxis Tupai, Bradley Anai, and Leki Fotu that are all here. They added several other good defensive linemen as well that went on missions, like Samisi Lauaki and Keaton Bills are two names. And then they also had Fua Puchutau as well that all went on missions that are all going to be good players when they get back. But Bradley and I has really impressed me at defensive end. Leki Fotu is absolute stud. He's a physical freak. He's not even 18 yet. He turns 18 in about a week, and he's 6'5", 300 pounds, playing defensive tackle. He's just long. He's athletic. You know, he's not built like the star Lotulelei or Lowell Lotulelei, where, you know, they're just big run stuffers that, and that, you know, fill that role great. He's a bit longer, a little bit more, probably a pass rushing defensive tackle, which I think the potential he has in this defense, I mean, I think his ceiling sky high. I'm excited to see, you know, what all three of these freshmen are able to do. I think you're going to see him play. I think they're going to get some playing time this season, kind of in the rotation that Utah uses. But I mean, they are three to watch, and they are three to be very excited about as the years progress here, as they get older.
Well, and then obviously, you know, that's a ton for Utah's defensive line depth when you can use a player like Stevie Tuikolovatu, because he wants more playing time. And as I told our friends over at Conquest Chronicles, which with Stevie going to USC, that's quite a credit to Utah's depth and Utah's coaching staff. And I know that defensive line has opponents everywhere just terrified of what they can do. So. That's kind of a brief, I'm not sure if it's brief, but kind of an overview of the team, at least through the first week of fall camp. We're edging closer to game day every day. So Alex, is there anything else you'd like to touch on before we kind of put a capper on it this week? And next week we'll dive a little bit more into our previews, predictions, and, you know, all the nitty gritty.
The only other thing that I would say is, you know, Coach Whittingham, I've always been very impressed with him. He's, you know, he's always nice. He has a sense of humor, but I don't know if I remember him being in as good of a mood as he has been this fall camp. And not to say that he's in a bad mood ever, but he's not. He's usually always in a good mood. But he was joking around a lot after the scrimmage. He just seems very happy with things. And I think that there's a lot of potential with this team, and I think he knows that, and I think it's showing. And I will say, you know, before I saw this team play in fall camp, you know, I figured they could be, you know, decent. I figured third was good. That was just about right. But, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen out of fall camp. I think this team is. It's certainly opened up my eyes a little bit. I mean, it's still early, and, you know, I don't want to go, you know, proclaiming they're going to win the national championship or anything crazy like that. But I've come away more impressed with the team through the first week of fall camp than I was expecting to be.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd have to agree with you. In terms of the reports I've heard, just because you just never know. I mean, there's so many unknowns, and as there is almost every season for a lot of teams, because again, that's the nature of college football. That's just kind of how it goes. But you know, when you have a returning defensive unit like Utah has, that eliminates a lot of concerns, and as well as the returning offensive line that Utah has, I think Utah's got the foundation to be very, very good this year. And then if they progress offensively and at least stay status quo defensively, it could be a really good season. It could be a season that is building off of what Utah's been doing the last couple of years, and kind of keep progressing and kind of building that depth and building that name and that brand. So I think it's a big deal. So I think there's plenty to be excited for. And heck, there's even a brand new big giant video board at Rice-Eccles Stadium that fans will have to go check out. FanFest, I want to say, it's probably about 2 weeks right around there, so fans should get up there and check out that giant new video board. Heck, you can see it from the freeway. Like, when I'd get off the exit, almost anywhere in the valley, you can look up at the hill, and obviously it's easy to pick out Rice-Eccles Stadium, and there's this big gray box with a big red U on it. That's the video board, and if you look for it, you'll see it from almost anywhere in the valley. It's massive, so... a lot of good amenity upgrades happening up at Rice-Eccles Stadium as well. So it's all good up there, and it's a lot of fun to be part of the program. Alex, if there's nothing else you want to cover, we'll go ahead and wrap it up for the week as we kind of get our sea legs underneath us once again as we get ready for the long grind of the 2016-2017 sports calendar, obviously kicking off with football, the high profile one of football. Volleyball, I think, starts in 2 weeks. Soccer has to be starting right around that same time. And of course, yeah. Coach Larry Kraskowiak, he's rebuilding his, I don't want to say rebuilding, that has a negative connotation, but he's reloading his program with a lot of new players. So we'll, of course, dive into that as we inch closer to basketball season. But right now, it's all football all the time. And there's a lot to be excited
about. And one last note, just speaking of non-revenue sports, the U.S. women won gold in the team competition at the Olympics. And the first alternate was Michaela Skinner, who is committed to Utah and should be arriving any time here.
She's down in Rio. She's with the team.
She is, yeah. So she, because she's the first alternate, she did travel to Rio. And so, hopefully here in fall, once she gets enrolled, Olympians tend to enroll a little late. But once she gets enrolled, we'll try to get an interview with her to kind of get, sometime this fall to kind of get a feel for what her Olympic experience was like. Obviously, she didn't get to compete, but she was there. Her teammates won the gold medal. She was the first alternate. So we'll try to get something with her, because I think she probably will have some good stories to tell from the Olympics in Rio that are still going on right now.
Yeah, and I'll be interested, because obviously not only does she not get a gold medal, but I wonder what she gets for being an alternate, if anything. I'm really curious, and that's something we'll have to dig into, Alex. Not only do you win a gold medal, but usually you win like $20,000 in cash, basically cash, when you win a gold medal as well. So that's got to be heartbreaking for her, but at the same time, it's got to be thrilling to be down there with this historic squad. Frankly, they just went down there and just laid the wood on every country down there. They were very impressive. They were very fun to watch. I'm an Olympics junkie, so I've watched almost everything I can. I love it. I have since I was a kid. Hopefully, her and all of Team USA are being safe down in Rio, just because Rio's a sketchy, scary place. So hopefully they all get back safely. And obviously, we can't wait to chat with her once we get closer to gymnastics season. And hopefully she can help help the Red Rocks win that elusive 11th national championship.
A lot of the Team USA gymnasts, I think possibly even all of them, have gone pro. I've seen a lot of ads with Simone Biles in them, who's obviously the best gymnast on the team, the best in the world.
I thought she was at UCLA.
She was committed to UCLA. She was, but she went pro, so she will no longer be competing for UCLA, which, is good in the sense for the Red Rocks not having to face her, but, getting to see somebody like that compete in the Huntsman Center would have been pretty cool. So Michaela Skinner has not declared pro. So as of right now, she's still slated to return with the Red Rocks, but I think Florida lost several gymnasts. UCLA did Biles, I think, went pro last year or something. It wasn't recent, but several of them have recently. So it's, something that, you might not have thought about, but, it's something to be aware of. But, yeah, as of right now, she's still slated to compete with the Red Rocks, and I'm very excited to talk with her and hear about her experiences and see her. She's one of the best gymnasts in the world. To be the alternate to that. And she was fourth in the all-around at the trials. So,
yeah, really, they took that fifth girl because they wanted a bars specialist.
Exactly. And they took Gabby Douglas, they took Madison Koshian because she's a bars specialist, and they took Gabby Douglas, partially because of Olympic experience, and Michaela Skinner, bars is kind of her weakest event. She's really strong on floor and vault, especially, are her two best events. And I think they wanted I think they wanted Vars. I think was something that they really kind of focused on when they were picking the last couple spots, taking Koshin, who was a world champion in the event, and Gabby Douglas did better on Vars than Skinner. So that might have been part of it too. But I mean, she's
Well,
one of the best gymnasts in the world, and it's really exciting for the Red Rocks that she's coming to Salt Lake.
it's hard to argue with the results because they won the gold medal in record fashion. They dominated, so
Yeah,
hell of a
exactly.
job down there. So, well, I think that will probably wrap us for this week. Thank you everybody for joining us. Thank you for supporting us over at Block U. We're starting to ramp up the content once again. It was a slow summer, frankly. Not a lot of news, which is probably good news when you don't have to chase coaches or off-season scandals or off-the-field scandals or anything like that. So, Alex and I we're both fully credit. We got our second credential, so we want to thank the Utah Athletic Department for that. So we'll both be up at the Rice-Eccles Stadium covering football games on game day, and we're excited to embark on this brand new season. And we'll come back next week and we'll chat some predictions. We'll probably go on the record. We'll throw it out there. I've been pretty close the last couple of years. I can't remember my exact record, but I've been with probably within a game. So we'll go on the record with that. And as we get closer to the kickoff of the 2016 college football season, so please come back and join us. Hit us up on Twitter. You can follow us at BlockU. Of course, go to BlockU.com. I got to sort out some issues with iTunes, it looks like, with our podcast. So probably the best place to find the podcast right now is BlockU.com. And once we get the iTunes and streaming stuff figured out, I'll make sure to this is all uploaded on there. So again, thanks everybody, and we'll come back and do this next week, shall we?